Hello, sleep friends. Welcome again to another episode. And today we are going to interview Keith Anthony Taylor, who is a hypnotherapist. Now, I don't really practice or participate in hypnotherapy, but I do believe in the power of visualization. And here we're going to hear some tips from Keith on how we can manage and control our pain. And as promised on this podcast, we are definitely going to explore different treatments and techniques that will help us as part of our research to see and compare different practices so that we can sleep much better. And here we go. Here is our guest, Keith Anthony. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Sleep Well Around the World. Today, we're going to have our sleep spotlight on London, United Kingdom. We're going to find out how the environment there and how people with their routines are able to manage their schedules well so that they can sleep better. Today, we are very blessed to have with us Keith Anthony Taylor. A little bit about Keith. He is, I can say, a jack of all trades, and we can learn a lot from him. At age 11, Keith started working to deliver milk door to door. He had also served in a bar, been a mechanic, ridden bikes with Hell's Angels, repaired pool tables, jukeboxes, and fruit machines. And then he also served as an electronic technician and computer engineer, worked as a designer on gas turbines and VTOL aircraft. He also engaged in sales and sold Encyclopedia Britannica as a senior sales trainer, became a financial consultant, was a car and motorcycle driving instructor, an ambulance crew, an hypnotherapist, and now as a podcaster. So basically, Keith has been in the technical field, the medical field, the financial field, the sales field, and entertainment field, and who knows what is next for Keith. What an amazing man. We can certainly learn a lot from you. Keith, welcome to the show. What an experience. What made you, first and foremost, go into different careers or different genre or different parts of working?
Well, thank you, Melissa, for having me on the show. It's fantastic to be here. And I'm happy to say it's a lovely sunny day in London here. Beautiful that is. I've had an interesting and varied career because I couldn't find my niche. My parents told me to work hard, get a job, and I would always have a future and always have a good career. But they made me take the job that they wanted me to have. And so I went into industry because they got me a job in the factory where my father worked, which was an electronics factory. And so I started work very young because I wanted to have a future. So I got myself my first job at 11 years old because I didn't have any money. My parents didn't have much money and they couldn't give me any money. So I went to work because I've always had an entrepreneur spirit. So I went to work at 11 and started to bring some money in. But then my first real job was working in a store selling fish, in a store called, used to be very big over here, called Mac Fisheries. And the people who worked in that store eventually opened up bigger stores like Sainsbury's. And when I worked in Mac Fisheries, the manager there was training me as a manager. But my parents made me leave that store and go into an apprenticeship in the electronics company. So when I was 15 years old, I was earning more than my father. And that was in 1970. I was earning £20 a week, which in 1970 was a lot of money, a lot more than my father was earning. And had I stayed in that job, I would probably be the managing director of a big supermarket somewhere now. But my parents made me leave because they knew better. And I had to start this apprenticeship where I was paid a pittance for the next 6 years, doing a job I didn't like, didn't ever want to do. And so that was the way my career started. So I was qualified as an electronic engineer, a job I hated, didn't like at all. And my brother did the same job, and he's doing very well in that now. He's a software engineer, and he's actually retired now. But he's in a very big job in computing now, computer softwares, does a lot of programming. But then when I got to 22 years old, I was into motorcycles. I had a very bad accident. I was paralyzed from the neck down, and I wasn't going any place anytime soon because I was laid up on a hospital bed, paralyzed from the neck down. So my career or my future prospects took a downturn. And so I had time then to do a lot of thinking, and things weren't looking too good. So from then on, I had a number of careers because I was very sick for a very, very long time, and I couldn't get anybody to give me a proper job. Do you understand this thing, rabbit ears?
Yes.
I couldn't get anybody to give me a proper job because I had a terrible medical history. So I did a number of jobs when I could, because I was sick a lot of the time, and I still struggle with my health. But so I did all those jobs that you were talking about, and varying degrees of success, because I became a sales trainer, which would suggest that I was quite good at selling. But I didn't like selling, but it made me change my outlook, because I was very introverted, but it made me push myself to go out and meet people and talk to people and change my persona. So I became very good at selling, and I had to learn people skills, and this was part of what led me on my path to become a hypnotherapist. Because I had to learn how to relate to people and how to talk to people, but the thing that really led me on the path of being a hypnotherapist was that because I was introverted, I used to do a lot of listening. People used to come and tell me all their problems, and I used to just sit there and listen, and most of the time just be bored, because it's not very exciting having people just telling you all their troubles all the time. And I had enough troubles on my own, but they would bring me down with all their problems, or tell me about their bills and their husbands and their wives and their girlfriends and their boyfriends and all their debts and problems with sleep and everything else. And I would just listen, and they would all starting to say to me that, "Keith, you're a hypnotist. Surely you're a hypnotist, because I feel so much better now." And I thought they were just saying that I was boring. That's what I thought hypnotism meant, because I knew.
Well, you know, I wanted to ask you regarding that. Well, first and foremost, it's really amazing that even though you had that accident and you had a big setback, major setback in your life, you didn't let it affect you, and you still kept on trying the various industries until you found your passion. Can you say that this is actually your passion, to be a hypnotist?
Yes, I guess it could be, but not so much a hypnotist, but helping people. I love to help people. Hypnotism is just a meaningless word.
But I would love to pick up on something that you said earlier, Keith, regarding, yes, you're there to help people, and definitely that's a noble job that you love doing, being able to give your talents and skills in helping others. But you did mention as well that it can also be taxing. We're only human when day in, day out, people are expressing so many problems, personal, relationship, health, and all of the problems that for sure people come to you with. So how do you marry those two things together of wanting to help people, but also protecting yourself from letting it affect you psychologically, personally, to a point that there's also that danger of you entertaining these negative thoughts? Where do you learn to put that barrier up of limiting that professionalism and also protecting your own well-being? Because definitely as a sleep coach, I would really want to delve deep into it, because a lot of sleep problems is due to people's careers and the stress that their careers have that potential to cause them having these nighttime anxieties and nighttime worries. So Keith, I would really love to learn from you on how you manage that, or how to mitigate that stress of letting people's problems affect you.
Well, Melissa, that's a very good question, and I'm glad you asked me that. And back in the day when people first started to bring me their problems, that was a problem for me, because I had problems of my own, and I used to worry a lot, and I used to be stressed out myself, and it used to bring me down. But over the years, because I've become older and I've become more mature, I've developed skills to protect me from that. And now I've learned the error of my ways. And because I've learned the error of my ways, I can help other people much, much better, because I've learned to stop worrying, because we all worry all the time. And it's a waste of our energy, a waste of our resources. So what I do now is I've understood that all that stuff that we worry about is the stories we tell ourselves. It's the nonsense that goes on in our heads. And 99.99% of it is stuff that we make up in our heads, and it never happens. So I just don't do it anymore. So I just meditate on a constant basis. I concentrate on my breathing. I breathe correctly. I breathe in and out through my nose. I make sure that I use all five chambers of my lungs. Most people have no idea that you have five chambers in the lungs. There are five in the right-hand lung. There are three in the left-hand lung, because the left-hand lung is smaller, because you have the heart over on the left. So I don't worry about stuff anymore, because none of it's ever going to happen. I enjoy life more. I meditate more. I breathe correctly, and I use my brain productively. So I'm not worried about stuff. That gives me a greater capacity to help people that are worried. And I can enjoy then helping people with their worries, because when I'm helping them with their worries, I don't take it on board. So when I've finished helping them, I can just go back about my business, helping other people, or going about my own day-to-day business. And so it doesn't affect me. And so I can enjoy what I'm doing.
Well, surely we can benefit. Yes, thank you so much. Surely we can benefit from adopting your very positive outlook, Keith. And I would love to emphasize that tip for our listeners, all of you out there who have that tendency to be plagued with worries and nighttime ruminations of things that could have gone better in our life. I love how Keith mentioned to take care of our physiology and psychology by breathing well, practicing good breathing techniques, and also just eliminating all those worrying thoughts. Definitely we are in charge of our thoughts. Well, you know, earlier we were talking about something interesting, Keith. Like, for example, people fear something as, you know, simple and basic as going to a dentist, for example. They fear that tomorrow they're going to undergo painful procedure, treatment, or maybe extraction, whatever it is. Something as simple as that may cause people to lack sleep. But you mentioned something interesting about handling some worry, that specific worry itself. I'd love you to share that. Well, for someone like me who doesn't really practice hypnosis, or hypnotism. I've never really tried anything like that. Can you please explain to us how we can handle something like that? For example, a visit to the dentist.
Yes. Well, first of all, let's drop that word hypnotism. It's a meaningless word, because all we're doing is using our mind productively and effectively, because all we're doing is thinking, we're visualizing, we're using words, because all we have in our mind, or not even words, we have pictures in our mind, we have stories in our mind. So what we have to do is to use the stories in our mind productively and effectively. So when you're going to the dentist, what's the thing you think? You're thinking, oh my God, the dentist. And that's the story that goes around and around in your mind, getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and nastier and nastier and nastier. When in fact, the dentist is a family man or woman, perfectly nice person, and he's there to help you. And he's not going to hurt you any more than he has to. And so what we need to do is to change the story we tell ourselves. So what I do when I go to the dentist is I say to myself, yahoo, I'm going to the dentist and we're going to have a good time, because he's a nice man or a nice woman and they're there to help me and they're going to stop my pain. So isn't that a good thing?
That sounds so practical. And instead of dreading it, you're actually making your mind look forward to it. And it actually does have a big help on people. I've never heard of anyone doing that, but I'm going to start applying that great tip from now on with anything that has that tendency to cause you fear. Because it, as you said, that fear is often unfounded. That fear is often just making it more harder for you, when in fact that may not be the case when you're actually in that dental office.
Yes. So we say to ourselves, oh no, how about if we started saying, oh yes, I'm looking forward to this. And that makes it so much easier. So what we need to do is to breathe into it. Remember, because when we know that we're going to the dentist, the first thing we do is stop breathing and we start panicking. So what we need to do is to make sure we carry on breathing in and out through our nose and breathe deeply and normally and remain calm and relaxed and look forward to the journey, because so many wonderful things can happen to you on the way to the dentist, just the same way they do on the way to the shops.
Okay, but what about when you're in that dentist chair and you're confronted with all those awful contraptions, you know, the sound of those machines and all of that in the dental office? Sometimes that will suddenly erase those cheerful thoughts that you had before. So how do we manage that when we're actually there sitting down?
Well, all those awful machines, that's just a story you're telling yourself. All those awful, what's awful about them? They're there to help you. They're there to make you better. It's wonderful technology, isn't it? It's wonderful stuff. And the awful machines you're talking about are the machines from the past, the way they used to be. These days, they're much more modern. They're much more efficient. They don't make the noise that they used to make when I was a child. When I was a child, the dentist used to have a very slow drill, and he used to have to pump it with his foot to make it revolve. And because I'm very old, and it was like a sewing machine. He had to move a pedal up and down with his foot to make the drill go. And it was almost as if he was doing some kind of a dance while he was in my mouth, pumping this pedal up and down to make the drill move. And it was terrible. And it was genuinely a nightmare in the old days. And I don't think about that when I go into the dentist. I'm looking forward to the dentist because I'm going in to show him what a good patient I am. And I go in there to show him, I go in to impress him that he can do dental work on me without anesthetic.
And that sounds really great. Is there anything also we can do, like, for example, any technique, strategy, or visualization that we can adopt to help us have that mind shift? It may not be so easy for people. They may dance back and forth and be cheerful. I'm going to be good. I'm going to enjoy this. and suddenly something, like, you know, when some fearful thought suddenly enters their mind, how do they shift quickly so that they don't have to be there sitting in fear the whole time?
Well, you can practice before you go. What I do is I practice being relaxed. I'm quite relaxed now. I'm sure you're quite relaxed. And everybody who's listening is, I hope, relaxed because they're listening to this podcast. They have no reason to have any fear. So what you can do is to, because you're relaxed now, or find a time when you are relaxed and just notice how that feels. And when you're relaxed, you can create what we call an anchor. And this is a visualization technique. So notice how good you feel, how relaxed you feel, and really get in touch with that wonderful, relaxed feeling. And then you can do something that you can relate to that feeling. For instance, you could make a fist with your right or your left hand. And then remember that anytime you make that fist, that wonderful feeling comes back to you. So that you'll always have that resource state of that relaxed feeling when you make that fist, or you could pinch your fingers together like that. Or you could just remember that wonderful relaxed state. And when you do that, it immediately comes back to you. So
I love that. Thank you for sharing that technique. And that technique definitely can apply to other situations as well. Sometimes when we're suffering from sleep deprivation or going to the doctor's office, definitely these great techniques that you've shared, Keith, is going to help us a lot. And especially now, a lot of people worry about pain and worrying about having certain treatments. I would like to ask you personally, because you're a big help in people overcoming their pain. In fact, just to let everyone know, Keith's podcast is entitled London Real Pain Overcomers.
London Overcomers Real Pain.
Yes, London Overcomers Real Pain. So you definitely help others to overcome their pain. How about your own pain? Sometimes we also need to have the skills and techniques so we can overcome our own pain. And we'd like to learn what you do, some strategies that we can learn from.
Well, I think I've already given you them, because I do correct breathing. So I have a lot, because I've had a major head injury, I've had a lot of pain in my life. And I live with pain all the time. And if I didn't learn how to manage it, I would go insane. So what I'm doing is maximizing my relaxation levels. So I have to breathe correctly. Since 1978, I've learned how to breathe correctly, because in 1978, I was in, and I can't tell you how much pain I was in. And I learned at that time that I could reduce the level of pain by breathing a particular way to reduce the level of pain, because in the hospital, they were refusing me pain management because I wouldn't accept that I was paralyzed. They said, you're always going to be this way. So they refused to give me pain management because I was an unruly patient. I wouldn't behave and accept that I was paralyzed. So I had to learn to manage the pain myself. And I've been doing that for 43 years now. And I do it by correct breathing technique and by dissociating from the pain. So what I have to do is to, instead of using the word pain, I use different words like comfort level. I talk about my comfort level rather than my pain level. So I think in terms of comfort rather than pain.
That's certainly helpful. Yes.
And I talk in terms with pain. We tend to think of pain as an enemy, don't we? We hate pain, don't we? And I don't do that. I treat pain as a friend, because pain is there for a reason. Because if you break a leg, you get pain, don't you? It's there to help you, to let you know that you've broken your leg. Otherwise, you could injure yourself much more badly, couldn't you? If you have a broken leg, you need to know it. So you get pain to let you know that you need to pay attention to something. So pain is your friend. So we need to respect pain. We need to treat it as our companion, as our friend. And when we do that, then pain doesn't trouble us in such a big way. So if I was to break my leg, I wouldn't lay there with a broken leg screaming and shouting my head off and saying, oh, pain, it's horrible, it's bad. If I broke my leg, I'd think, oh, I've broken my leg. I can feel some discomfort there. And I'd say, thank you for letting me know. Let's deal with that. And immediately the pain would subside because I've acknowledged the signal. And it was the same when in 1988, I had to do surgery on myself because the kind people at the hospital had offered to amputate my leg. And I was not having any of that because I'm attached to my legs, no pun intended. And so I went home and I sat down in my kitchen. I took out a scalpel and a bowl because I had very deep gangrene in my left leg between the ankle and the knee, 4 inches wide and about a quarter of an inch deep. And I decided that I was going to cut it out. And pain was my friend because it was helping me to know how deep to cut. And so we worked together and I was there, and the brain is registering the pain, although it feels like it's in the leg. So I sat there and I thought, well, you're down there, pain, and I'm up here. And it kept a good distance between us when I was doing it. So it wasn't as bad as it could have been. Am I making sense?
Where were you at that time?
Where? I was in my kitchen in South Croydon, which is in South London.
But did you have to go to the hospital right after? So what happened after that?
I didn't go back to the hospital. They wanted to cut my leg off. But I started to treat the leg myself. And where the hospital was changing my bandage once a month, which is why it got badly infected, I changed the bandage every day. And I put salty, wet bandages on it, because I thought the salt would help to heal it. And the water would evaporate, which would cool it down, because that's like a refrigerator. That's how refrigerators work. You know, the liquid evaporates and has a cooling effect. So I put salty wet bandages on it every day. And within 2 days, it started healing and skin started to grow back. And it was a miracle because I've still got the leg.
You know, Keith, that is such an amazing and surprising story. Talk about managing pain, talking about controlling and taking hold of your pain and making it your friend. And it befriended you right back, obviously, because within days, your leg is intact, no need for amputation, and you managed it all on your own. This is an absolutely inspiring story that we're all going to learn from. To be honest with you, Keith, I have never heard that pain can be our friend, but hearing your story, I now believe that it is very possible. And in future, I will remember this story. If there's any pain that comes my way and our way, we will definitely know how to deal with it. That is so amazing. So with your work that you're doing now, and then on top of it all, helping others, with your job as a hypnotist, helping people overcome pain and doing your podcast as well, I'd love to get some insights on you living in London. I love to put sleep spotlights on different countries. And I know last time you told me this interesting story, you were run over and yet people just left you and not even helped you. So I would love to get a bit of insight on the atmosphere now in London. How does that affect your work? And most especially for our listeners, how does it affect your sleep with everything that's going on right now?
Well, I have a very strange sleep pattern. I've had 2 hours sleep just before this show. And that's enough for me because I tend to work around the clock because I'm talking to people all over the world. And so the world never sleeps because it's on a 24-hour clock. So I tend not to sleep very much, but I meditate. I work on a how can I put this? I work on a, I'm a low power machine. I don't waste energy with things like worry. So I don't need so much sleep, because most people are running an inefficient machine. They're racing around. They've got a lot of nonsense going on in their heads, which wears them out and runs them down. And so I work in a low power mode. I use just enough energy to get things done. That means I'm not wearing myself out. So I only need a couple of hours sleep. Sometimes I don't bother to go to bed at all. I go to bed every other day sometimes. And I'm not tired. I don't think tired thoughts. Most people, you know, go to bed every day because they get to 10 o'clock in the evening or 11 o'clock in the evening and they think, oh, I'm so sleepy. And they have to go to bed. But I don't think sleepy thoughts. So I don't watch the clock. I actually don't have a clock in the house here. The only clock I have is on the corner of my computer screen. I don't wear a watch. I'm not very good at keeping time because I don't keep clocks all over the place. And that because of that, I don't get sleepy. I don't think sleepy thoughts. So that keeps my energy up.
It's amazing that you can keep aware of your energy patterns and also be able to reserve unnecessary energy and eliminating unnecessary stress so that you're not feeling tired or overly tired, that you need so much sleep. But how about those moments? Of course, we cannot avoid those moments when work tends to pile up. Okay, how about what can you share to our friends out there on those moments when they have to deal with a pile of work and just something comes up one on top of another? We cannot have a perfect schedule every single day. When you're feeling overly tired, how do you manage yourself in that situation?
If I feel overly tired, then I sit down in a chair and I close my eyes and I meditate. I do my deep breathing, which I'm doing all the time anyway, because I'm always breathing in and out through the nose. And I close my eyes. So what happens to me, rather than me getting tired, my eyes get tired. So I just close them to let them rest for a bit. And I do deep breathing. And I'll do that for maybe 5 or 10 minutes, and then I'm okay. And or sometimes I find I sit down for too long, so I'll go for a walk. And when I'm walking, I do my meditating while I'm walking. And I shut down my mind while I'm walking, go into a low power mode, and I just walk mindfully. Yeah, I'm sure you understand mindfulness.
Yes.
And I just enjoy the air, take in the scenery, and walk mindfully. And that's good because it gets the oxygen into my lungs. It gets the adrenaline flowing through my body because I'm walking. And exercise is very good for replenishing you. For me, it's just as good as sleep, because it gets endorphin flowing through your body and it gets all the feel-good chemicals going through your body. And that restores me.
Right. And you never feel that accumulated sleep deprivation will have any detrimental effect on you? Because we know that a lot of neurodegenerative diseases can also be linked to lack of sleep, or sometimes not being able to process with our memory as optimally as we should if we are sleeping well. And also physical alertness, mental well-being. Did you not feel that if you're lacking sleep, can that affect you as well?
Well, I'm not recommending that people follow my regime, because there is evidence that people who don't get 8 hours sleep a day can be more prone to Alzheimer's and dementia. But in my case, I think there's a high chance of me getting that, because I have 70% brain damage. I'm running on the fact that I'm even talking is a miracle. I literally should be dead because 70% of my brain isn't even there. I'm a walking, talking miracle. If you look at my MRI, you would, unfortunately, I'm on the wrong laptop. If I was on my other laptop, I could pop an MRI onto the screen and you'd be able to see my brain alongside a normal brain. And it's shocking. I literally should be dead on based on my MRI.
Well, you've done a lot of unique things in life. You've done your self-surgery, removed gangrene, and you're running on 70% of your brain function. You're sleeping 2 hours, and look at you, still looking 30%. Energetic I've and got, fresh. You're kind of defying all odds.
Yes. Well, it shows you what the human brain is capable of if you're determined.
Yes, I love that key word, determined. And on that note, we'll definitely wrap up with everything that we've learned. And you are the living embodiment of determination, because the way you've lived your life, even through all the difficulties and challenges, you prove and defy all odds. And look at you now, energetic. You've got this great podcast. You're in a position to even help others. So that is truly inspiring, Keith. And I always love to wrap up my shows with the three best tips we've learned from our great conversation. Thank you, Keith. You've helped us realize that one tip we can help everyone out there to sleep better is breathing techniques. And definitely we have Soma breathing, Buteyko breathing, the 478 breathing method, whatever works for you, as long as you can regulate your heart rate, breathe well, that can help you control your sleep. Secondly, Keith also told us that we can manage our fear and our pain. Definitely, realistically, we cannot snap our finger and let it go away, but to manage it, to befriend it, to control it is something we can do so that we can sleep better and not stay up the whole night in pain. And lastly, Keith told us to learn to relax and to be determined to control our thoughts so that our negative thoughts don't take over us. We can sleep better, sleep well, and live our life optimally and enjoyably, as obviously Keith does. Keith, I can't thank you enough for giving us such great advice, tips, strategies. And next time we all go to the dentist, I think we're gonna smile more and definitely maybe end up having a new friend in our dentist. Thanks to you. Love all the sharing, and I'd love to get to talk to you more about your great, unique ideas. Thanks so much for joining the program, Keith. Loved talking to you. Thanks so much.